I'm going to talk about some poems by Tim Wright. My reading has kind of ended up pretty much completely like semantic, and also just cuts through from poem to poem without reading. Without reading poems in their entirety, I guess. I'll just get straight to it, because it's kind of wrong. Now. No controls.
Can you just go up?
Do you want to try?
Yeah.
I've used it on a Mac before, sorry. Okay, that's the best I can do.
It's good.
If you're a nameless shapeshifter rather than a subject that can be processed and found guilty, and if you impersonate the law in order to act with impunity, then a Republican governor / Hollywood superstar made of steroids will jump onto the bonnet of the stolen truck you're driving and shoot you with a fully automatic military-grade but police-issue assault rifle, and the audience will identify with him as the expression of their desire and will show no concern for you, will consider you to be pure evil, i.e. literature. But you can bear this, because just as Mulderaw has an aluminium chest and his shark-slash-lover a mercury one, you are made of mimetic polyalloy, which is to say that you are invulnerable. We are punished for attempting to escape punishability, but we survive and bear this by reduction, as destitution and as language, that great mystery, as a plural and pullulating more-than-slash-less-than self. As Sean Bonnie writes in a recent work, the next time they shoot us, we'll refuse to die. I read Tim's poems as a kind of bearing of the unbearable. I mean bearing the word in a number of senses. That he discards the money armour of bourgeois selfhood and bears or exposes himself to the present. And he bears or withstands it for as long as it takes. At no point does he relent and go get a cushy job. And he exposes and conveys it to us. It comes bearing, like a gift. And his language bears the marks of his own exposure. Bearing via language, I should say, isn't secondary. Creation or generation is the very means by which the present is endured, and in doing so it generates specific forms of temporality. Time as onness, on and on and on, perhaps like a looping GIF file, but also consciousness as hopelessly switched on, unable to turn away from the spectacle of administration, discipline, and violence as pure means. Tim,
would you better sleep that?
Tim couldn't join us at the conference because he hates flying. Tim prefers to drive. In fact, he only recently confessed to me that he was actually born in a car travelling at high speed from Perth to Sydney, out in the middle of what he calls the desert aquarium, and he was driving, horizon on all sides, fugazi, banging, at high volume. And he was so surprised he almost had an accident. Why? He writes parenthetically in his long poem, November, did I choose the driver's seat? Too much steering wheel. He's in bourgeois subjectivity's all-purpose mobile fortress par excellence. In near accidents, he calls it a shell. Yet here he shirks the very controls he is supposed to desire and that are supposed to be so perfectly adapted to him as to be invisible even as he works them. But he's nonetheless always on the move. Moving through the world is what I'm interested in, he writes later in November. Tim is a fossil fuel flaneur. He's driving from Perth to Adelaide. He's in Moyston, Perth, Larrheetha, somewhere between Waratah and Xanthus, in Kwinana, Adelaide, Melbourne, Balaclava, Yass, Panania, Clovelly, Janelli, on Albany Highway, on Chain of Ponds Road, Western New South Wales. They're taken from his poems. But this moving isn't merely body/car transit, and this world isn't merely geography. The geography is a culture and a politics, and the moving is mind-minding, language-languaging in and through them. Even his taste for driving is a conscious participation in an extremely destructive yet obligatory national pastime. But his participation is interstitial. He moves between. And he's not only between places and images and discourses, but, as he writes in redactions, in the spaces between words, at the hinge, at the end of each word, and the beginning of each silence, which he associates with the possibility of change. Tim doesn't drive to conquer and destroy time as many do and must, but to move in and with it, and to move in and with and against a culture. And this moving is writing, which is also reading. In Moisten, another driving poem, Tim writes, description of time and time's tininess is continually, constantly eluding, is continually, constantly, 2 moves ahead, the only solution to mimic time or to write in time. This mimicking or writing in time accounts for his approach to form. Tim harvests shards of this world that he's moving through, tears them out and offers them up like strips of paper, and proposes a way of staying open and switched on amongst them. And what they convey to us is that, like his poetry, this world is torn to pieces, riven or crushed or splayed, and the pieces are still animated by the colonial and capitalist violence that produced them. Tim's writing switches on and off just like that. Its art lies in its unapologetic economy, its bareness and its rhetorical horizontality. You have to range widely through Tim's work like it was urban sprawl. Tim gives us not index cards but index shards for/of this world. And I think for me this means that for him description is fundamentally active and in some sense political. It is a necessity. The reproduction of the relations of production fundamentally conditions reality, which is therefore suspect. But the immense labour required to maintain the dubious verisimilitude of this social form can itself be read, its mechanisms and attempted erasures laid bare. Scattered notes cobbled together, knives and stabbing weapons, salvos in the guerrilla war against the reigning reality principle, an unswerving insistence on its contingency. Doing language that does not yet raise that doing to a spectacle, and also, at times, seemingly idle, unjustified description. Puddle on the shoulder of an unsealed road the colour of milk in hot water, remnant of a branch buckle in an open fire in a field. Smoko. That's what John Howard would call this. Insinuate himself in a role. That's a complete stanza from Moisten. In the first sentence, Tim just says what he sees as he pulls over, a puddle by the road and the remnants of a fire. In the second, he hits us with an association he's made, because it too is there, snapping his stanza in two, smoko. And this word is not in the mouth of an overworked truck driver actually in need of one, but of the conservative populist, now former Prime Minister, talking working class lingo to nab votes. A mundane observation and a simple association gives a whole geographical cultural configuration, landscape, modern rationalised commodity transport systems mapped onto the colonial pastoral, and the national populist politics carrying out and profiting from this mapping, all knitted together with little sense-stitch associations of tea, milk in hot water, fire, tea break, ergo billy can, smoko, both tea and cigarette, and wood smoke. A mind, in time, takes a break, and notes how precisely in doing so it is caught in this nightmare web of land, work, power, and ideology, and their reproduction. A little further on, this one line fact stanza. Kangaroos eat grass by snipping it with their teeth. Sheep rip it out of the ground. Tim only needs to make this terse, generic comparison. In the reader's mind, it expands into its innumerable actual instances since invasion, and we aren't only thinking of sheep, but other livestock, pests, and, to be sure, those who introduced them. White people with guns, proprietors, expropriators, terminators, hubristic destroyers of country. How long have we been doing this? In his long list poem, Sons, Tim pursues his critical indexing with a markedly wry sensibility. Tim takes the ideological truism that the sun is ubiquitous in Australian life, which is an encoded violence, and applies it literally and willfully, employing the indefinite article and the plural, creating a reductio ad absurdum that illuminates a world by exceeding the sense of its dominant discourse. Reading it, I am reminded of television ads for Dulux house paint, which show the hot rays of the Australian sun and then tell you that if you don't buy this paint, your house will fry. The sun never blinks. It is not going away. It is white patrilineal authority in a far-flung corner of empire, the objective counterpart to the steering wheel. In Tim's poem, sons become impossibly omnipresent characters in the various scenes of the dismal Australian drama, both shining on and acting in them. But he doesn't actually give us those scenes, only some isolated flashes. The sun is always on, and on something. Floods, sandbags, alcohol, hangovers, street vomit, blood transfusions, ticket inspectors, China, piercing, sunscreen, bread, shark tanks, old video games, icebergs, presumably melting. And also on the things Australia only knows as media images, like Kevin Costner or the Sea of Japan. A barge is full of sun. A tugboat tows a sun. Slices of sun are for sale at the market. The sun also shines on riot squads, rubbish strikes, plainclothes police and prisons, on mass arrests and serial pests, which is News Limited speak for activist, right next to upcycled deck chairs made of suns. The heat is Aussie languor on the balcony, but also populist authoritarianism and conformism backed by force. Need to cool off? A sun diving into a lake is juxtaposed with a classic Australian patriarchal murder-suicide, a sun driving a car into a pond. The sun is a contemporary art exhibition, but also just our contemporary, and it is colonial disavowal and anxiety, a sun keeping us up at night. There is no I in suns. The closest we get is a sun groaning on a desk. Nor dramatic development. There is only a blank spreading or drifting through a world. Numbered right, ongoingness, simultaneous distance and insight up in your grill. Heaped up minimal blurts at once economic and redundant. And these suns will come up tomorrow and the next day and the next day. Here are three quick scraps of hideous Oz discourse. One from Do Not Lick Lid. Wound down the window to yell something. Anything. Two from Redactions 8. Are we becoming a nation of wimps? Jug of beer carried carefully across the room. Three from In 11 Parts, number 1. Should be locked up. That's a one-line stanza in the poem, with no speaker, no subject, and no setting, just pure discursive violence. On Tim's part, this is just like a sort of artless crop. It's a totally familiar soundbite of penitentiary Australian culture. It could be heard in all sorts of mouths, from lay folk to heads of state, read on a News Limited tabloid any day of the week, yelled out of a car window, and chillingly could refer to an extremely wide range of people. And Tim gives it just to us just as banal, generic violence. Don't like what we're doing? Want to change things? Should be locked up. An interpolation that doesn't even need to address you, and it can function even as a retort to what would repudiate it. Don't want to disfigure yourself in the manner required for social citizenship? Then we'll disfigure you and marginalise you. This too is what is going on. This is what we are doing. And Tim's writing also drives on and on, quietly yet also bluntly micro-indexing the reproduction of white patriarchy in its ecosystems, deep dispossession, misogyny, neo-fascist persecution mania, corrupt urban development, and so on. I'll cut the list short. Lake for lease, he transcribes from a billboard in Breakfast All Day. And our capitulation without resistance and just how damn ridiculous we can be as a result. A train goes past, wrapped entirely in an ad for some kind of pill. Needling against the creeping insensitivity to what we actually really are. Today, on Nauru, Omid Soroshe, on hunger strike for weeks. Only 1 or 2 days. Organs shutting down. His name I can't help hearing as Omid. That's from November. How long have we been doing this? Tim's writing also continually reflects on the position of the writer. From the point of view of the neoliberal job market slash those on-the-move number plates printed by former Liberal Premier Jeff Kennett slash their own family cajoling them into becoming recognisably productive subjects, even if only as entrepreneurial poets, those interested in moving through the world are like going nowhere. Breathing. Breathing. Good. A pleasure to breathe. This expression is utopian and dystopian at once. It's dystopian like Kevin Davies almost able to breathe. Tim is nominally stating that he is able to, but he's reassuring himself, betrays a real relief or astonishment that it's actually still possible. It also seems to convey his sense of uselessness in a functionalised world. But then in the same movement, it really is a pleasure to breathe. Tim really is like Diogenes the Cynic. He has no need to inflate his ego by screwing over his neighbours, developing an investment property portfolio, and curating his own consumption of luxury goods. Pleasure is already available with nothing. And this micro-affirmation in the midst of this thing, extreme, is its unswerving negation. And if breath is traditionally voice, song, poetry, for Tim it is much more spare and bare, mere taking in and opening, giving out, sensation and proposition, straight and flat. Reading and writing in this climate is difficult. Some quotes. Someone writing their thesis in a caravan. Browsing as methodology. Binge reading PDFs, but none of this really happens. Digging a deeper hole to publish in there. And this, which I'll read, is an abandoned pencil, in it, which I'll read in its entirety. Even tenured seagulls, dove-coated assemblies, grizzle in an interstice. What you do, for a breath, now intermittent, patent landscape, disembodied armrest blundered to bed. In the stinging kitchen light, early October, I abandon pencil, only slightly. What does Tim abandon his pencil to? On the one hand, he puts it down. He can't bear it. He renounces. The price of driving writing through the world is banishment from economic citizenship, indifference, humiliation, suspicion. Everything's fucked. Why bother? At least until the penultimate line. But how can you abandon something only slightly? With the last line, Tim abruptly veers away from any highfalutin vaut sur dichter or je ne peux plus parler or poetry makes nothing happen. But his abrogation is minor and disavowed. He cuts it straighter and flatter, concatenates low and sharp for to survive, and then simply breaks off. But I think there's another way of reading this poem, which is that Tim abandons his pencil to itself, and that by extension, he abandons his writing to itself. The self is fed up with the unbearable situation and the futility of its own objectifications. It is conked out, but the pencil keeps on going, and Tim sides with it rather than the self. And then everything turns into writing and wronging and rotting and rorting and rioting. A number of other poems seem to me to embody this. Instead of splaying, they can press up heaps, heap up strips of world. Here reduction works at the level of words and syntax. Writing reduces to the pure language swarm that persists both underneath and beyond the restricted economy of the subject and its genital / grammatical sense. It touches the language that language is made of. Mimetic polyalloy. Its temporality is infinitive rather than linear. It is always on, rushing, teeming but at a standstill. Shapeshift a poet, become nothing but words. Mind's eye hooked open and stapled to the world. I'll finish by reading just one last poem. I thought you could read the title of this poem as a kind of farewell to the motorist subject. Its destruction is in the past tense, and its repetition as the first line emphasizes that the first person pronoun has already been completely alienated. It has already just become another empty / full word / thing among the others. Oh, how I was pole-axed. Oh, how I was pole-axed. You worry, mumbled your way, glowing, the same minty conditions, nestled in shrink wrap, strange ingredient, crashy instant noodle, compact ambulance, faxed moon off-cut, diphthong swooping season, notably glummer, unshod alveola, princely emu walking backwards, snow dome hospital, seaside gluey hair tremens, sliced loam, frozen easterly, chorus, track marked, wishier you, chewy bicycle, pink and germy, door slamming, Zurich, vacuum, isosceles, fruit shifting, pucks, white on green, quality B grade friend, filter off Jeff prehensile, vagrant cosmo, fruity lexia. Thanks.